Thank you. Welcome. Happy summer. I was thinking we should have a new greeting, happy summer. I don't know if you guys had a good summer. We were in Regent's Park yesterday, just going for a walk with the kids, and I thought, how nice has the weather been this summer? Is it me, or is it like been sunny most days, and it rains at night? It's like remarkable. This is, if you haven't lived in England before, this is as good as it gets. Genuinely, it doesn't get any better than that. So Pete's basically stolen my introduction. So yeah, I'm married to Esther, and we were part of the church when it started. We moved back to London about 11 years ago now, and we reconnected with Pete and Bea then at St Mary's and sort of dreamt with them about planting the church here and then planted out with them. I've known Pete since he was at university before he was married, and not a lot's changed remarkably. I think it is. A couple of things have changed. Firstly, he's got a much better dress sense than someone who buys all his clothes for him and advises him on his hair now that he's married. And secondly, the first thing his GP says to him now is BMI, and that never used to be there. So if you think that's deeply inappropriate, then apologies. So me and Esther, we've been married for nearly 17 years, scarily enough, in a couple of weeks' time. We've got three children who you have seen terrifying the church, sort of running around. Esther leads worship, I'm a trustee, we led a hub, and we've done the marriage course recently, so I know a few of you through that. Before I sort of set out what I'm going to talk about today, I just wanted to, a quick aside, have you ever had like those stress dreams that are kind of perpetual, that like come back to you? I've had one for about the last 20 years about my A-levels, that I kind of wake up in a blind sweat that I haven't revised half the course for a particular subject that I found quite difficult. And genuinely, you feel like the exam is that morning. Have you had that horrible feeling? Well, the reason I tell that is I actually had a stress dream about this talk on Friday night. And I thought I was really relaxed about the talk, and on holiday I was talking to Esther a bit about it. And I had this dream, very briefly. In this dream, I was in a room like this, but there was a lot more people. So it was partly stress, partly ego dream. It was a much bigger room than this. And it was like a side room of people who couldn't get in. And I felt the need to not only speak here, but I kept dashing off to the side room. Because although there was a video link, I felt like they've got to see me. This became a little bit difficult after a while. So someone said, well, why don't we all go outside to like a big place up there, let's walk up to this big park and then you can speak to everyone at the same time. I was like, what a brilliant idea. So we walked up to this big field, but as we walked, it started pouring with rain. By the time we got there, everyone was completely bedraggled and it was just so horrendous. So someone said, oh look, there's a little like hut up there, let's go up to the hut. So we walked up to this hut, and we got there, there's about five people there. And me. And I woke up. So I thought all I'd ask is just stay for the title. However bad you think it is, just sort of grin and sort of press through. So intro over, what am I going to talk about today? Well, we've just come back from holiday. We were in France for a couple of weeks on the Atlantic coast, which was brilliant. And so I was having these thoughts about the talk, and I sort of got this talk about, you know, the beach, tales from the beach, sort of three life lessons from the beach. And if you'd spent as much time as I have making sandcastles, moats, teaching my son how to bodyboard and not sort of drown himself, you would have a talk. But I didn't feel that was right. And I felt God said, just tell your story. Just tell the story of your life and draw some stuff out of it. So that's what I'm going to do. And in telling my story, I'm going to bring out three things that I think have got a wider relevance for all of you. And I'm not telling my story because I'm great, although I am. But just to show how God has intervened in my life in some amazing ways, and hopefully you can draw something from that. So before I tell my story, Iona, do you want to come and read?
I have to say I'm enjoying Pete's laugh tremendously. Okay, so the reading is from 1 Corinthians 1, and it's verses 26 to 31. Oh, look, it's on the screen. Brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is, our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord.
Thanks, Anna. So, just before we start, I'm going to tell my story in a second. We're going to do something slightly different this week. I'm going to try and make it a bit more interactive. So we're going to stop twice during the talk, and you're going to have a couple of minutes just to talk to the person next to you. If you don't know the person next to you at all, and you think that's deeply awkward, don't do it. Just go to the toilet, eat the sweet, do something different. And the reason I was thinking about this, I've read something recently that said, what percentage of talks or presentations do you remember the content of? So a week later, what percentage do you actually, can you recall? So I don't know whether people want to guess, whether it's 50%, 60%, 70%.
30.
30 from Pete. Any other thoughts?
10.
5. You've heard Pete's talks. that was too easy. It's actually about 10%. But educational psychologists are saying one way of increasing that significantly is to talk about stuff as you're learning, to talk to others about it. So I'll do that a couple of times. So, my story. So it all began for me. My parents actually met in a sort of a mental institution, which was, we wouldn't use those words these days because that's sort of, you know, the language has changed. In the 70s, scarily enough. And I was born in Aylesbury Hospital in 1976. You can work out my age, I don't know why I put that. The strange thing that happened to me when I was born was I completely rejected my mother. And I've done a little bit of research on that, and that's like really, really unusual to reject your birth mother. But I completely rejected her. And as a result, she went into depression and actually became sort of physically sort of threatening towards me. So at that point, social services intervened and decided that I needed to live with somebody else. And the natural first port of call was family. So they looked to my uncle and said, could you look after Ian and bring him up? And he said, well, I'm sorry, I was sort of serving overseas. He was in the army. So it wasn't possible for him to bring me up. So then they went to my grandparents. But they were quite old and also a bit eccentric. So I think a good decision was made here not to go and live with them either. And so I then went into a children's home while they tried to find sort of short-term foster parents for me. And my natural parents had a faith, they were Christians, so they basically stipulated that I needed to grow up in a Christian family, which was brilliant, but massively reduced the pool of people who could look after me. So anyway, so I grew up in this children's home. And sort of wind forward, I was there for about 2.5 years, and the children's home was actually closing. So they were getting a little bit desperate by now. The sort of little boy needs to be looked after by somebody. And my foster parents, who I did go and live with, were desperate to have their own family, but they couldn't, for medical reasons, have their own family. So they were doing short-term fostering, and they came to see me, came to visit me in the children's home. And to cut a long story short, I went to live with them. And the intention was it would be quite a short-term arrangement until my natural parents were well enough and I go back and live with them. Anyway, I lived with my foster parents until I was 18, so it ended up being a long-term arrangement. So the first thing, I think it was quite odd growing up in that environment because I had two sets of parents. So I used to go and see my natural parents sort of probably every other weekend and then every school holiday and less and less and less. And then the worst bit was parents' evening, which is awful for any of us anyway, isn't it? You sort of the parents come into school, talk to your teachers. Both my sets of parents came in, and they didn't get on because that was a slightly awkward situation. So two people would come and hear about how badly I was going to school, which was really helpful. So the first thing I wanted to draw out in my life was God clearly intervened when I was a baby to ensure I was protected and placed into a safe environment. And throughout my life, I've been able to draw on that and really draw on that and know that God's for me, He deeply cares about me, He loves me, He wants the best for me. And of course, at times, you question that because stuff happens in life and you think, God, are you really for me here? But I think that's been a foundation I've been able to really stand upon. And so I guess the first question I have for you is, do you really know deep down that God's for you, that He loves you, that every aspect of your life he cares about. And it's a really, really simple truth, isn't it? It's not complicated, but it's really hard to grasp it. But I think if we do, it completely transforms the way that we see life and the perspective we see life with. I was having this chat with my middle child, Karis, recently about this. I was saying, do you know, God loves us, he knows everything about us, he knows how many hairs we've got on our head, the sort of time we wake up. She was sort of looking at me wide-eyed. I was thinking, this is brilliant. This is, I'm sort of teaching her about the love of God. And she sort of interrupted me. She said, but Daddy, you haven't got many hairs on your head. I was sort of like crestfallen. But she had a point. But we also have some good banter with our children, where, and it's really nice, they sometimes say to us, they say, Daddy, I love you so much, I love you to the moon and back. I'm like, oh, that's lovely. And then one of them tries to be, I know I love you to God and back, like God's past them. And we have this sort of banter that goes back and forth. But what I want to do is just spend 2 minutes, just turn to the person next to you, and if we can put the first question up. I just want you to spend 2 minutes talking about that question with the person next to you. This isn't a complex truth. But you know how Jesus says we need to become like little children? I think this is one of the first and the key ways that we need to do that. So we're going to take a break for 2 minutes, mainly so I can have some water, if you see how that's and then we'll come back together. Okay, we'll start again. The slightly terrifying thing about doing that is if you just keep on chatting. So hopefully that was helpful. So just winding back to my story then. So I grew up with my foster parents. And in due course, remarkably, I became one of 4 boys. So my foster parents, they adopted Ed, who was abandoned by his parents when he was 2 weeks old. And he sort of became part of the family. And then amazingly, they were able to have children of their own, which was another completely different story about how God intervened in their life. And they had 2 more boys, Jonathan and Ben. So I became one of 4 boys, grew up in a very safe, loving, secure environment, which was fantastic. And my parents went to a slightly crazy, charismatic church. You know, sort of one of those, it was definitely more about how you felt than about what you thought. Let's put it that way. And I think the highlight or the low light was dancing the conga around the car park to a song called Jubilate, which, as a 12-year-old, I found sort of slightly embarrassing. But I'm sure God had told us it was the right thing to do that summer. Through my teens, my faith definitely started to drift. I mean, definitely started to drift. I was very, I'll say it myself, I was a very competent sportsman. I played a lot of sport, particularly golf became my thing in my teens. And when Sunday morning became a critical sort of morning to play golf, I started playing golf every Sunday. And by the time I got to my A-levels, I hadn't really been going to church for 3 or 4 years. Kind of life revolved around doing my A-levels and doing well in those, playing golf as much as I could, and going out and girls and drink and all the things that you do when you're sort of 17, 18. And I still sort of had a faith. It was kind of over to the side here, but it definitely wasn't a real live faith. And it was at that point that God really intervened in my life for a second time in a sort of major way. So I was planning my year out, and it was a real thing to do then, whether you're sort of going to explore yourself and travel around the world. Or, it was all about you, actually. You weren't actually doing anything for anyone else at that point. So I was planning my year out, and I actually got a scholarship in the States to go and play golf for a year. And so my master plan, it's quite embarrassing looking back, I was going to work at McDonald's for the first 6 months, doing the evening shift so I could play golf in the day, and then I was going to go to America and play golf for 6 months. And I had this all set up, it was all planned, and I was up and running. I was doing it. Living the dream, as someone said on the front row. And then a friend of my parents sort of said to me one week, and he was a really cool sort of guy, I said, well, why don't you come with me to this event on a Friday night? It's called the Dregs Cafe. We just hang out, play some music. It's part of church, but it's not really church. I was like, okay, sounds just a bit different to what I normally do on a Friday night, but let's do that. So I went down there and basically met lots of Christians who were quite normal and quite cool and quite interesting and quite attractive and thought, oh, this is a bit different to my parents' church. Just the people were very different. And from there, I got invited along to the church, and I sort of thought, wow, this is really different. This is like some music that is in tune and feels a bit more normal. The talks were fantastic. And then the bit that was really weird was I had this thing called ministry, where God showed up and did some stuff. And it was around the time of the Toronto Blessing, for those who remember that far back. So some really weird stuff was going on. And basically, I sort of started to think, well, you know, this is more for me. I might think about getting more into this. So I gradually started going to the church more. And then it came to a head because I was basically invited on this six-month discipleship course that they ran as a church. And this guy said to me, why didn't you come to the course for 6 months? It'd be brilliant. And I was like, I'm going to the States to play golf. I'm living the dream here. And then my scholarship fell through, which was like devastating. That basically the college wrote and said, sorry, we haven't got a place for anymore. So I was stuck. I had 6 months of my year out left. And I was now weighing up the McDonald's management training scheme, which they were offering me, which, believe me or not, is more than the 5 stars. You go way beyond that. Versus 6 months discipleship course. And I remember saying to this guy, I'm not really sure I'm a Christian. And he was like, it doesn't matter, come on the course. And my parents sort of got wind of this and started raising the money for the course from like friends and family in desperation. And they said, oh, we can pay for you to go on the course. I was like, go on the course. So to cut a long story short, I went on the course. 6 months, living in a Christian community with a load of guys and girls in their sort of early 20s, and had a fantastic 6 months. Totally changed my life. I mean, some of the friendships I've got now are the people I met there, some of my best friends. I'm married to Esther, who I met. She wasn't on the course, so we weren't allowed to go out. You know, there's sort of Christian courses, rules that they have. And God did huge things in my life. He did more in 6 months than he'd done in the last 10 years, probably, in terms of putting roots down, healing me from the stuff I spoke about earlier that, you know, caused me to question things. So it's just a fantastic, fantastic 6 months in my life. And I think my reflection on thinking back now about it is God intervenes at certain points in our lives in major ways. If you look at the Bible, you think of Paul and you think of John and you think of Moses and you think of those. There were points in their life where God intervenes in a major, major way. And I think the bit for us is just to sense that's what he's doing and then to get with it. So we kind of have a choice. I'm sure there's some great stories where God's tried to intervene, or there aren't the stories, because God tried to intervene and the person didn't get with it. So the question for you, you know, is where are you in your life right now? Is God trying to intervene in your life in a major, major way and you're getting with it, or are you ignoring it? And that can look like very different things, can't it? It can look like going to live in a different place, completely changing career, getting married. You know, I'm talking about major, major interventions here. Major changes in our life. The other way I was thinking about it, if you think back to my foster parents, sometimes God is calling us to intervene in someone else's life. And that's a completely different way of looking at it. You know, they wanted to have a family, but for medical reasons they couldn't. And they decided to foster children. And my mum gave up her career in her early 20s. And she poured her life into young people. And babies, and you know, now she's got 4 boys, 3 of whom are sort of generally okay, and the other one is still struggling with some stuff, and that's okay. But sometimes God's calling us to intervene in someone else's life. And she describes to me that when my mum and dad met me in this children's home, they really felt like this is a God thing. We really need to sort of take this guy, this sort of 3-year-old who's completely independent and won't even hold our hands to cross a major road, and told me other funny stories like that. They really felt that was God's call in their life. So the second quick question I want you guys to consider for 2 minutes is this. Is God planning a major intervention in your life right now? Or is he asking you to intervene in someone else's life? Now, before we do that, a thing to think is he's not always... Life is sometimes steady as you go. Life is sometimes do your job, do a good job, come home, watch TV, go out, see some friends, do a good job. That's what life is like sometimes. Sometimes it's the main and the plane. But at certain points in our life, God does plan major interventions. So just spend a couple of minutes just chatting to the person next to you about that, and then I'll just wrap up. Okay. Hopefully that was helpful. And I think stuff that we talk about here, hopefully we go on and talk about in the pub in the week, not just for my talk this week, but when we come to church, because otherwise it just kind of stops here sometimes, doesn't it? And we're busy by Tuesday lunchtime and we've forgotten Pete's great talk that he spent 3 days preparing. So back to my story, just to wrap up. So I finished my discipleship school, which was brilliant, and I headed off to university in Birmingham, and that was a culture shock. 6 months in a Christian bubble to Freshers Week. That was interesting. And by this time, me and Esther were going out, and we were reasonably serious. And I went to study sports science, because when I was sort of obsessed with sport and golf and things, I thought I'd be a PE teacher, because then I could spend all my life teaching people how to play sport and playing it myself. I had in my mind the sort of games teacher I had, who sort of seemed to spend the whole lesson showing everyone how brilliant he was, shooting baskets or playing golf or something like that. So this was the sort of vision I had for my career. And about the end of my second year, I suddenly dawned on me this involved working with children. And I genuinely don't know why up to that point it hadn't struck me. I thought, oh my gosh, that's going to be awful. For those of you who are teachers, hats off to you, because it's a fantastic career, but it definitely wasn't for me. So I started thinking about my career. Now it was a bit late, because you know, sort of everyone who's really keen at university starts applying really early for all the graduate rotation schemes and all that sort of stuff. So starting my third year, I started applying, and I basically sort of had failure after failure. And it was sort of getting a little bit embarrassing. I was applying for these sort of sales and marketing jobs, and getting down to, you know, when you sort of, you think something's not quite right here. So if you're applying for, say, Mars, and 16,000 people applied, and I got down to the last 100, there's like 94 jobs, and I didn't get one. I'm slightly exaggerating to make a point, but it was sort of like, there's something not quite fitting here. So I sort of scratched my head, getting pretty worried by now, and I went to see the careers advisor at university, and never met this chap before, and we started having a bit of a chat, and he said, have you thought about going into accountancy? And I was like, I genuinely said that I've never, ever thought about anything, ever. That thought has never crossed my mind. He said, well, you're good at this, you're good at that. I said, yeah, I am pretty good at those things. I said, well, isn't it about maths? Isn't it all about maths and numbers? Isn't that what accountancy is? It's counting things. So, well, there is some maths, but it's not. That's not the main thing. I think you should do accountancy. So I was, and my father-in-law was an accountant, so I had a bit of a chat with him. He's like, yeah, I think you could do it. So it was now very late in the year, and I applied for pretty much the only accounting firm in Birmingham who had a place left on their graduate scheme, and I got the place. And I'll never forget the first time we turned up. You have to sort of do more studying. We turned up at college, and they went around the room and asked everyone what you studied and what university you went to. And there's this sort of, oh, I went to Oxford, and I did maths, and I went to Cambridge, and I did PPE, and da da da. I went to Birmingham and I did sports science. And I kid you not, that was the reaction I got. Everybody laughed out loud. So to say I had to play catch-up a bit with the study is a sort of understatement. And I won't bore you about my sort of career since then, but God's massively blessed me in my career. And I've just become a partner at PwC, which is the largest accountancy firm in the world, if you believe it, which is slightly worrying. And I advise government organisations that are in a financial crisis, basically. And I absolutely love what I do. I'm really passionate about it. And why do I draw out that last bit of my story? I think it's, you know, I passionately believe that God has something for you, a vocation, that your skills, your experience, and what you've been through, you are a brilliant fit for. And God wants us to absolutely love and thrive in what we do. And a lot of people don't. I meet a lot of people, I hate my job, I can't wait till the next holiday, I'm miserable in my work, I'm stressed, blah, blah, blah. That's not what God wants for us. Now, I'm not saying every day at work is going to be fantastic, because it's not. We all have dreadful days at work. But in the main, I believe God should be, you should be doing something that you really love doing and you're passionate about doing. And if we're going to change the world out there rather than in here, we need people who are fantastic accountants, lawyers, singers, songwriters. I'm just drawing my own experience of my family so far. teachers, people in government, doctors, etc., etc., etc. And that's where we're going to make a change out there. So if you don't feel like you've found your thing and you hate going to work, this is for those of us who've finished university, or if you're at university, really start thinking about it, start praying about it. What are your skills? What do you love doing? And chat to your friends and family about it to find that thing that's really going to bring you to life. And someone once said to me, which is a really good question, but a slightly dark question, but I'm going to throw it out there. I can't find anything biblically to back this up. If you had a year left to live, but you had to work, what would you do? And it's interesting, if you ask people that question, you get some really interesting responses like, but I've always wanted to set up my own business doing this, so I'd probably give it a go because I'd be dead in a year anyway. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting response. Well, I've actually always wanted to be a teacher, but the pay isn't what I want, and well, do it. If that's what you're passionate about, then do it. So we're not, because we're running out of time, we're not going to do a 2-minute chat about that. But you can have a think about that in terms of your career. So to wrap up, God's blessed my life in amazing ways through some interventions that he's made. And right from when I was a baby, right through to today, that's been the case. So I'm incredibly blessed and fortunate. But the things I'm really keen you guys reflect on are about God loving us completely and being completely for us, which gives us a very different perspective on life. And when God's making a major intervention, to be able to sense that and get behind it, whatever that looks like in your life. And finally, we spend a lot of time at work. For goodness sake, find something you enjoy doing. So on that note, let's stand.